character builds. Everyone has them or wants them. We decided to do something unique where we added rules imposed on a character. Our goal is to provide fun builds, which may or may not be novel, to fill an adventuring party niche. We call the segment Twist Builds. Welcome to Dueling GMs. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Anthony.
This is a show for GMs and players.
One about designs and details.
To build a better role-playing community. Let's get into the general character building rules and then talk about our character.
Great. So we set up a list of 10 rules and we're going to always abide by them. Rule number one, establish a theme, declare a concept, and impose a twist.
Rule number two, all characters are level 10 using point buy.
Rule number three, all races and classes are acceptable without explanation.
Rule number four, all Tasha's optional rules can be used.
Rule number five, no homebrew unless it's semi-official on D&D Beyond.
Rule number six, multiclassing is allowed, but must follow requirements for ability scores.
Rule number seven, no magic items unless the class somehow grants them. Any mundane items are allowed.
Rule number eight, all subclasses can only ever be used up to a total of 10 levels. We want to showcase different builds this way.
Rule number nine, established settings will be within the world we've been creating in our other workshops. We'll continue adding things to the world in future episodes.
And rule number 10, these builds are purely for fun and quirky concepts. They may be somewhat optimized, but no guarantees.
So since this is our very first time doing this, let's give you an explanation as to how we came up with these 10 rules and why we thought they were important. So number one, establish a theme, declare a concept, impose a twist. We wanted to come up with something that both of us could work on building and then decide on, okay, I have this idea for a particular class, race, combo, and then the other person is going to throw a twist at us that makes us say, oh, well, I'm going to have to work a little harder to come up with something there. It could be something roleplay-wise. It could be something mechanical limitation. All things are on the table.
For rule number two, all characters are level 10 using point buy. We didn't want to create an optimized character at level 20, as most campaigns don't usually make it that far. We thought 10 was in the middle of the road and would be enough to at least get a few subclass features or multi-class and have a couple levels in each.
Yeah, if your build idea can't come online, as people like to say, by level 10, it's not going to. And then point by, because just the roll of the dice is too random, too arbitrary, and we wanted something that was going to be consistent across the board every time we did this. So point by was simple. Number three, all races and classes are acceptable without explanation. We realize some things are maybe supposed to be exclusive to, say, Eberron or to particular, maybe the Dread Realms, if you're doing one of the newer, like undead types of things. But anything that's acceptable and printed in one of the original source books are usable, and we don't really have to explain how we got it.
All Tasha's optional rules can be used. We wanted to kind of adapt with the new changes and the new optional rules is that. So we, gave each other the rule to use optional proficiencies, languages, ability spreads that's defined in Tasha's book.
In addition to any of the optional things for the additional spells for classes and yes. That sort of thing. Yep. Number five, no homebrew unless it's semi-official on D&D Beyond. Now, some of you guys may have different opinions on the Critical Role stuff that's on there, whether it's subclasses or the Bloodhunter class that's available. We have access to it. We're going to use it. We like it. And it's our show.
Yeah. As far as rule number six, multiclassing is allowed, but must follow requirements for ability scores. A lot of GMs are, okay with not having the multiclass requirements, but for the sake of you know, adding a little bit more strictness, we are imposing that on us just so we can you know, have an official rule there.
Yeah. Number seven, we didn't want this to be predicated on if I get this magic item, if I can have this crafted for me. So we said no magic items. And then we also said unless the class somehow grants them. There's the artificer that can basically create their own stuff. So basically, they're the only ones that are kind of immune to that, and they still have to be able to make their own version of this. But any mundane item is allowed. I know a level one character isn't going to be able to afford plate mail, but you're level 10. We're going to have any common non-magical item available.
Rule number eight, all subclasses can only ever be used up to a total of 10 levels. We want to showcase different builds. We wanted to impose this rule on us so that we could show variety, but sometimes subclasses, some overshadow others, but we didn't want to overuse them. We wanted to have unique options to demonstrate for you guys.
Yeah, so our plan is to actually track that on the side, and we may give you periodic updates on, hey, you know, Anthony's leaned really hard into the light domain cleric and he's almost used all of his levels. And I know one of the first builds that we've already come up with, I've tapped myself out completely on 10 levels of a particular subclass. I will never be able to access this on a podcast on Twisted Builds ever again. But we'll track that on the side. It's for fun, but it's also to keep us on our toes because we want to kind of come up with unique ways of utilizing all the subclasses that are available. Number nine, we've started in other workshops crafting a world. Joseph's done a good job of giving us a baseline. And then as we have done some of the creating an adventuring party, creating a new character, we've started building out this world. And in the future, we'll continue to do more of that. And we'll always continue to build out this the same world. So we're going to assume these characters are also going to be dropped into that world. And that may or may not come up in the story aspects and roleplay twists that we provide for each other moving forward.
Yeah. And last but not least, rule number 10, these builds are purely for fun and quirky concepts. They may be somewhat optimized, but no guarantees. We're not necessarily crunching numbers, trying to figure out the best DPS for damage or certain things like that. If it's part of the theme or part of the twist, we'll certainly try our best, but there's no guarantees.
Yeah. So our first attempt at a twisted build, we came up with the theme using some of the terminologies that we had already established, using the three pillars of exploration, combat, and social, and using some of the roles that we had established. We decided let's build an exploration oriented shock trooper. So that was our theme. Joe, you came up with what for your concept?
Yeah, so for my concept, well, let me start with the class level. I went 6 levels in monk and then 4 levels in fighter. But before I get into that, I will say the twist. Anthony added the twist for me to have him be paranoid.
Yeah, always to think that there was somebody following him.
Yeah, so that's definitely going to be more of the RP side of things, but it definitely made me think about some reflavoring of certain things, and we'll get into that in a little bit. And what about you, good sir?
Yeah, so I was trying to come up with a similar idea, and you gave me the twist of this character always eating. And probably eating too much. So I was thinking of somebody who is going to be a little bit chunkier and ended up coming up with a rogue 8 cleric 2 build that we can talk through here in a second. But I figured heavy on the con. And so maybe how would that potentially look? So what did you end up doing with your shock monk? And I will tell you, the reason I gave you the twist that I did was that Exploration had the opportunity to dip pretty heavy into Ranger. And so I wanted to see what you would do if you came up with a like a Beast Companion or the new Dragon Companion for a Ranger, or if you had some other type of a character that had like a familiar. I wanted to see what you would do if you ended up having one of those and you were also convinced that something was following you around. Like, how would you treat this creature? And you ended up just completely bypassing it, which is perfectly fine because it forced you to come up with a completely new idea. But that was where the paranoia thing came in. I wanted to see how you could handle that, and you did it by just not having a companion. So yeah, what did you do instead?
Absolutely. So with Monk 6 Fighter 4, this build kind of relies on the subclass for the monk being the shadow monk or way of the shadow, and I wanted it to be the way of the shadow for a couple reasons. The exploration at level 6, they can teleport between dark spaces, which is super helpful for exploration when you're trying to sneak in and out of places or stealthing around. But then I thought, like, how, I guess, ironic, or maybe this is why they kind of leaned into it in the first place, was just constantly seeing shadows move, whether it's from their training, whether it was from something that, kind of just sparked from that. So I thought that was interesting. And with the fighter, with Fighter 4, I went with Champion to try to kind of combat as they grew into their fear. They wanted to kind of be the best, so that if something scared them or if they felt that they were being followed, that they thought that they at least had a fight or flight option, I guess you could say.
That makes sense, yeah.
I went with a Shadar Kai to kind of, which is a sub race for the elf, to kind of play into that a little bit further with the paranoia. They also have ability to teleport once per short rest, I believe, with the let me pull that up. The Blessing of the Raven Queen. Once per long rest, as a bonus action, you can teleport to 30 feet into another space you can see, and then you gain resistance to damage when you teleport until the start of your next turn. Again, that fight or flight and that paranoia of, is there something there? Did I miss it? Did I not? And though the other thing that I kind of leaned on was the elves trance ability. I know it's a racial thing, but the advantage against being charmed, not going to sleep, is kind of like that I'm training myself to stay awake because things move in the darkness, and that's something that terrifies me.
Yeah, sure.
So how about you? Let's
for those who didn't hear the conversation, explain the shock trooper aspect of it, because that was part of our parameters. What were you hoping to accomplish with that?
Yeah, so with the shock trooper or shock attacker, their whole bit is to kind of get in, do a bunch of damage, usually dex-based, partially strength, and then get out of there. They're not supposed to stick around for too long. They usually don't win against battles of attrition, but they can hit hard, even if it's just for the first couple rounds, and then get out of there.
Yeah, super high DPS type of build that, yeah, if you don't win in the first couple of rounds, there's a good chance that you're going down. But the idea is to just go full on Nova Blast and take everything down. But it's a martial build, not a caster build, so that we had those parameters set up for ourselves. Yeah. So what did you end up coming up with before we pivot pivot to mine. You said you were going with the high crit option, and what was kind of the idea on like your first couple of rounds of attacks? How are those supposed to play out?
Sure. So with the first couple rounds, I took the feet, Fey Touched and Elven Accuracy as two feats there, to kind of up my wisdom and dex to help with those two situations, for being that explorative individual, great for monks as well. So the champion increases, has an improved critical. So 19s or 20s gives you a crit there. With Elven Accuracy, you can reroll one of your dice if you have advantage. So the question then just becomes, well, how can I get advantage? With the Shadow Monk, if you can use some key to cast darkness centered on something that you wear, and usually this poses a problem, right? You can't see what you're hitting, and that is quite a problem. So for my fighting style, from my fighter, I went with blindsight. So now you have this individual who can, you know, teleport between darkness, you know, get into the fray very quickly, also with unarmored movement, can move, you know, 45 feet. But with the ability to see in darkness with blindsight and having darkness there, you get advantage on attacks and enemies get disadvantage attacking you. So that's kind of out of the gate. So now we have advantage, which then allows me to roll three dice with Elven Accuracy, combined.
Drastically increases your opportunity to roll your 19 or 20. Yeah,
exactly. So that was kind of the combo there for the first round. With the Fey Touched feat, I was able to also pick up Hex, which can start you off with a little bit more damage on all your attacks as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you were able to, we did a little bit of number crunching there, and your damage per round is a little, let's see, well, your chance to crit is like 27% chance on every attack, which is ridiculous. So that was nice. And then even though your unarmed strikes are not doing a lot per attack because you're able to do multiples, and then we also factored in your action surge, right?
We factored in action surge, which you get fighter level 2. We also, again, using Tasha's rules, we made a rapier the monastic weapon, which brought that up to a D8. So you're allowed to take a couple attacks there, and then a second set of attacks with the second wind. I'm sorry, not second wind, action surge. And then if you have that darkness kind of prepped before combat starts, or, you know, right before, ideally, and you have Hex either already cast, or in the first round you cast Hex, then you can do 2d8 plus 2d6 for just a set of attacks. And then if you action surge, you can do it again, and you get a high crit chance on all those. And then if you already have Hex cast, you can do a bonus punch for 1d6 as well, plus Hex on that. So 2d6 there, and then plus dex on all those.
Yeah, so raw numbers, assuming that all of those were hits, we were estimating somewhere around like 54 points of damage on round one with no magical items, which is pretty darn good for a monk.
Yeah,
so pretty good. Accomplished certainly the shock trooper side of things. Did you accomplish the other aspect? How was the survivalist side of things?
Yeah, so being a decently high wisdom 16 plus 3, and being the paranoid type that he was, like I went with like a spy background just to sort of add to that paranoia as well. Sure. He's got proficiency in perception and survival, which kind of was that explorative side of things. Weirdly enough, I went with deception as a form of survival. Sure. As that makes for a spy. That was sort of, I was like, okay, well, that definitely fits, even if we wanted to have, you know, custom or, you know, basic backgrounds there. And then for exploration, again, that perception, they've got stealth proficiency, acrobatics proficiency. Again, he can teleport in darkness. So if he's, you know, doing a heist or, you know, trying to get information that way, it's easy to, you know, get in, get out in terms of the exploration there. Also has dark vision, 60 feet, again, blind sight at 10 feet. So definitely is aware of their surroundings, to the best of their ability, and can hopefully balance enough and travel the tight ropes into an area and then teleport with darkness is kind of the gist for the exploration.
So fantastic at solo exploration. Does he have anything that makes him useful for group exploration, or is he the type that you would send in ahead?
This would be the scout type. To
gotcha. Okay.
Also has thieves tools to, you know, even if they teleport inside somewhere, if it's locked even from the inside, they can still have a chance on opening that up as well. So
gotcha.
Yeah
nice, very cool. All right. Any other thoughts? Anything as you're flipping through the character sheet that was worth mentioning?
I mean, the key again was mostly going to be used for darkness, but it can be used for, you know, stunning strike and things like that during sure. combat. So, you know, that helps if you need, you know, extra help on those first few attacks.
Advantage again.
Yeah. And then also with, you know, some quicken healing and second wind, he's got a little bit of, I don't want to say durability, but enough to at least keep himself in the fight a little bit longer if he can't get out fast enough. So it kind of gives him a little bit of a, well, I'm, you know, trying to be the shock trooper, but if I get caught up, I can maybe go one more round and then get out of there.
Right. I'm a shock trooper. I'm noping out of here in round three, whether you want me to or not. Yeah.
And I'm going to heal myself up to the best of my ability.
Okay, yeah. Cool. All right. I went with an interesting concept that I had actually brought up to some friends a couple of days ago, and that being a rogue that predicated itself on trying to get multiple sneak attacks as often as possible. And there's only a few ways to do it. The way I decided to go was to actually do a rogue that had Sentinel.
Okay.
So that was the basic premise on this. And so if I was going to do that, I needed to have a little higher armor class. So I gave myself the breastplate, which I guess I didn't necessarily need because it mitigates some of my dex bonus. So armor class is okay. It's not great, but it's decent. I think depending on what I was doing, I probably could even go in and give him a shield and bump that up to an 18. That's not really that hard to do. And then con was actually a plus two. Well, that's something we didn't actually do on yours. Before we get too far in mine, what was your ability score across the board there?
Certainly. So ability scores, I had strength at an 8, so minus 1. Dex at an 18, plus 4. Con is a 16, which is a 3. Intelligence of an 8, minus 1. Wisdom 16, so plus 3, and then charisma 8, minus 1.
That's what you get with point buy.
Yeah, that's what you get with point buy. I also again went with feats instead of ability score increases. Sure. So also with the fey touch. I could Misty Step for non-darkness teleporting, and then armor class was a 17 for some durability.
Yeah, cool. And then your highest skill was what?
Highest skill, we're looking at plus 8 with dex, like stealth and acrobatics were plus 8.
Okay, cool. All right, so this character, the rogue, was a tabaxi. I went with a little more speed, dexterity, but I also thought it might be fun to have a, you know, Garfield style overweight cat. And again, point by, I had strength of an 8, dexterity 18, con at a 14, intelligence 10, wisdom 16, and a charisma 9. So I had 2 in the negatives there. I also went, I believe I did one ability score increase and then took the feat Sentinel. Let's double check. Yeah. So that's why I have a slightly higher stats, but not too much. Skills, I leaned pretty heavy into some of the skills as you can do with the rogue. So I hit on a lot of the survival exploration stuff pretty hard. I have acrobatics, perception, stealth, and survival all at an 11 or 12. So I figured that very, very much covered all of that. Athletics, insight, medicine, nature, all at 7s and 8s. Animal handling 7. So lots of things that are relatively high there. But the basics of the build, pretty simple for the most part. And again, similar to yours, if it goes longer than about 3 rounds, it may have to move on to plan B, which is more the typical rogue of move in, attack, and then boot back out until it's my turn again. But the basic premise would be invoke duplicity, because my cleric is a trickster cleric. So 2 levels of trickster gives me the invoke duplicity, and I can have that station to give me my flanking, sneak attack, that type of thing if I needed it. But ideally, I would always be positioned right beside some other person at melee. Because if you're not familiar with Sentinel, that really comes alive, not necessarily in the idea of me wanting to actually attack somebody and keep them from moving, which is what most people use Sentinel for, but I wanted to actually be able to attack on somebody else's turn, and I can do that with Sentinel if an ally gets attacked. I wanted to try to get that, because with level 8 rogue, I'm doing 4d6 sneak attack damage. I wanted to be able to trigger that as a reaction as well.
Sure, yeah, because sneak attack is limited based on just each turn, not a round. So
it's one of those rules as written. You can actually, you know, if you can figure out a way to do it on somebody else's turn, then you can trigger it again. That was the plan there, but I needed to come up with a way to not necessarily be the squishy target if I'm standing right by the barbarian or whatever. I wanted to actually have them target the barbarian for some reason, and then be able to retaliate, you know, stab them in the foot when they're attacking the barbarian. And I realized that at least for a while, it would be possible, rather than using my bonus action to disengage and run away, I could use my bonus action to cast Sanctuary.
Okay.
So if somebody wanted to attack me, they would actually have to make a wisdom save. And if they failed it, they were forced to attack somebody else or completely lose the attacker spell. So that was the basic premise there. And having those couple of spell slots, there's only 3, gave me the availability also if I wanted to give myself Shield of Faith or use Bane or Bless to bolster the party. I could do that, or I could just hold on to 3 rounds of Sanctuary with the idea of sneak attack, apply the base damage, and then cast Sanctuary as my bonus action, and then wait until, you know, somebody makes an attack, and then break the Sanctuary to use the Sentinel build. It was an interesting concept, and I don't know how survivable it would be. It would probably depend on like the party that I had around me. Only ended up having 73 hit points, which isn't great at level 10, especially if you're planning on being a frontliner and not running away. Now, the advantage I needed to have was the rogue subclass I took was scout. And scouts have a really nice feature called skirmisher that as a reaction, when an enemy ends its turn within 5 feet of you, you can actually move up to half your speed as a reaction and not provoke opportunity attacks. So I actually have the opportunity, if I really want to, if somebody starts to come closer to me, I can run away on their turn as well. So I have the potential for either option, either to, you know, smack them if they attack somebody else, or if they start coming close and I'm getting low on hit points, to actually run away on their turn, not on my turn. So I figured either or, depending on how long the fight lasts. And that is every single, like, I don't have a number of uses on that one. So I figured if the combat goes longer than 3 rounds, I'm switching to skirmisher instead of the, you know, the sentinel potentially.
Sure.
So that was the basics of it. The scout also has a nice feature of survivalist. So get proficiency and expertise in nature and survival skills. So that pretty much sealed the deal right away on a rogue that was able to cover the exploration pillar that we covered.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, obviously rogues are skill heavy and that's a good thing. And it seems like that definitely fit well with the exploration.
Yeah.
It sounds like you also then are, you know, as the name suggests, are a little bit more scoutish than helping the party.
Well, between having the survival skill that high and also as the trickster, getting the blessing of the trickster. Mm-hmm. So if there was a party member that if everybody was trying to sneak, I can give one creature, a willing creature, advantage on stealth checks for an hour. And I have unlimited uses of that as well. So that's, you know, that was the concept there, that I can help the rest of the party sneak around, if they needed to, and could also do it myself also for, you know, for survivability, that type of thing. So that was the idea, either solo or group based to be able to dip into that just enough to get us where we needed to go and get us there on time.
Yeah.
So I thought it was interesting that both of us ended up, you usually think if you're doing the exploration, you almost immediately assume somebody's going to be the ranger. And then the GM throws the book up in the air and says, well, I'm eliminating that entire exploration thing because the ranger's sole purpose is to, you know, make that impossible. Yeah, we were able to come up with concepts that fulfilled the exploration side of things, right? But still be pretty viable in combat as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I totally forgot this part, but with the shadow arts, in addition to darkness, the ability to use key points to cast dark vision, pass without trace, or silence as well.
Yeah.
So that could help the party a little bit more. Again, totally block that out because the focus of that key in darkness was in combat, but
right,
you know, the exploration out of combat can definitely still be used with pass without trace for the whole party for stealth. Yeah. That's cool that we both found ways to get around the ranger exploration thing without I think both are good builds in the sense where, you know, they fill the exploration. The shock trooper or the shock attacker it definitely fits. Now, what was your, I know you also did some number crunching a little bit for this build. What were some of your things for your shock attack?
Yeah, so mine was more consistent and was averaging a little under 22 points per attack. And then it was predicated on if I was able to use my reaction for another sneak attack, then obviously that got doubled. So about 43 points of damage per round if I was able to use the Sentinel reaction. Okay. And my two hit was a little bit lower than yours total because of the way you built yours out. And obviously you far surpassed me in crit chance. But I think total damage output over the course of a longer stretch, I probably had you by a little bit, but I think you, let's see, my hit points, 73. Where were you sitting at for hit points?
Hit points, I was at 87.
Okay, so your survivability was probably a little bit higher than mine as well, potentially, at least in terms of hit points alone. So it was kind of a crapshoot there. Over time, I probably could do more damage, but it was probably less likely that I was going to do as much damage as what it says I could do. Because I might have been kiting out of there a lot more often.
Yeah.
So cool. It was an interesting concept, at least on my end. It was an interesting concept. I wanted to see how it worked. And I definitely ask, go ahead.
I understand the con. Was there any other role play aspect about the foodie for your?
Well, character? it was mostly the idea of, you know, casting sanctuary on myself and then, you know, reaching into my pack and pulling out like a portable tea set or whatever, sure, since nobody can attack me, or just like reaching into, you know, one hand into the backpack. You've got their rapier in one hand and the free hand that doesn't have that shield, because I didn't put it on the sheet, reaches back and just grabs like a turkey leg and is just munching on and watching right in the middle, nice, of battle while, yeah, everybody else is fighting.
Okay.
Because that was kind of the thing. I had considered going much higher con, but with the point build and the requirements that we gave ourselves in order to go into cleric, I had to put that wisdom up a little bit higher than what I wanted it. So the con ended up only being a 14. I was going to go a lot heavier on that, which would have also made him a lot more survivable.
But with the higher wisdom, you know, things like survival and perception,
Yeah, it skills, helped it quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You had me way beat in skills there, and that's, you know, half the battle.
Right. I figured with the survival and the nature, I don't think I had an opportunity to take additional tools, although, because I gave him the smuggler background, but I probably also I thought about doing the chef background, but outside of just doing it because of, you know, the role play stuff, let's be honest, the chef background leaves a lot to be desired. Or maybe it's not even chef background, the chef feet. That's
I'm like, I'm trying to think of the chef background.
I don't think there is. But yeah. But the chef feet is okay in very, very situational aspects. And for the most part is not great. And had I maybe gone to level 12, I might've gone with the chef feet. Or actually, with the split build, I probably would have needed like a level 14 to get it to it again, or two more points of cleric. Sure. Yeah, so I might have gone chef at that point just because it added more to the flavor. But I needed that one point of dex and wisdom, and mm-hmm. I needed sentinel. I mean, the whole build was based around sentinel.
Right.
So I had to forego doing the chef. But the one thing that would have given me was the chef's tools also.
Oh, true.
So that was the one thing I probably didn't lean into as much as I should have or could have. But yeah, I think overall I could have played him as the nice tubby Garfield type of character for sure.
It would have also been entertaining to get expertise in chef tools.
Yes, for sure. Had I taken it, I would have given up on probably athletics, actually. I probably would have kept acrobatics and given up on my athletics expertise and done it with chef's tools also.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And if we were to do any of the items, obviously the apron, the bloody apron from Wildmount would have been one of the first ones for sure, and would have helped with the crits. Because in addition to it just being cool and one of those things where no matter how much you clean it, it always looks like it's covered in blood, is fun. But yeah, it lowers your crit threshold by one. So that would have helped.
It would have been pretty amazing for this character that I made too.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That was a fun little first attempt.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I like it. And I think... the twists are fun. I think next time we might go a little bit more mechanical in terms of a twist. We can keep it, RP, but we'll see.
Who knows? If you have an idea for a theme you want us to try or a twist to inject, then feel free to let us know. If you want us to try just a weird quirky build of some sort and maybe both of us try our hand at a different variation on it, you can let us know that too. Or if you absolutely hate the concept and you wish we never did it again, well, I suppose you can tell us that as well.
Yep. All things are viable.
Until next time, I think that's it. You got any parting thoughts here?
I mean, have fun with your builds. These help with just sparking ideas or interest. Just let us know.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time talking about like character backstories and coming up with concepts and stuff like that. This was the exact opposite. What if you just had like next to nothing to work off of? Could you still build a really cool, fun character concept with just like one little quirk or one little flaw? And we did. And if we were to come up with a background, there could be a lot of stuff to work in there just based off of these concepts. So you don't have to start with one or the other. I think we emphasized that before, but hopefully these little mini builds will show you that there's a lot of fun, quirky, but still somewhat viable build options out there that you don't have to stick with the standard tropey stuff or the super optimized whatever, rogue, edgelord, hexblade, whatever, paladin thing. There's a lot more options out there.
Yeah, and just from our previous podcast about just adventuring parties, there are different niches, and this was a couple of those things discussed, the shock attacker in combat and then the exploration just as a pillar, depending on, working with different players, you might come up with different needs in terms of in an adventuring party. And this is kind of showing that even though that need is there, it does not limit you on really anything else.
Yeah, for the most part, one or two small decisions can, fill in the gaps on all those things. And it just makes the difference between, one entire completely different build or play style from another.
Cool.
Awesome.
Well, until next time, have a good one.
See ya.